You are listening to the cycling podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Today we are in Asolo.
Cozze ci delle cozze, cozze vicine, non spigudeci ora, non spigudeci ora.
Hello, I'm Lionel Burney. I'm with Daniel Freeb.
Hello, Lionel.
Hello, Daniel.
Dove siamo?
Oh, that's a good question. My mind's gone completely blank.
Asolo.
We're in Asolo. We're in Italy. We're outside what's been our press headquarters for the afternoon, just a stone throw from the finishing line. A little bit of a buffet here. There's some pasta and a bit of Prosecco. Been quite pleasant.
You always start to sound perky when the word buffet is mentioned.
I do, yeah, I do. I think eating nice things is a pleasure.
It is, Lionel. It is, and drinking nice things. We've been given a glass, a very small, modest glass of Prosecco. Prosecco produced in the vineyards around Asolo and going further towards Conegliano, Valdobbiadene. We'll be there again in a couple of days, but we're having a glass of bubbly to celebrate or certainly cogitate today's events.
We are indeed. Well, let's get on to today's event because it's been another packed day on the Giro. It was stage 11 from Modena to Asolo, 227 kilometres. There was a very fast start to a predominantly flat stage. An early break of nine, which included Manuel Quinziato, Moreno Moser and Lee Howard and Filippo Pozzato.
I was going to say, come on, Lionel.
I was nearly going to miss him out. Couldn't miss out Pozzato. They got away but really got nowhere. And it took around 70 kilometres for any kind of break to get away. Three men, Vigard Staker-Langen, Liam Bertazzo and Anton Vrabel finally got away, and they stayed away until the fourth category climb, which came with 20 kilometres to go. Langen was the last man caught just as he reached the top. Just before the climb, there was a split in the bunch following a crash, which left the pink jersey Bob Jungels with very little support from his Etix Quick-Step teammates. On the descent of that climb, Vincenzo Nibali, Alejandro Valverde and Esteban Chavez pushed clear. They were then caught. And just as he did yesterday, Andre Amador of Movistar attacked. Bob Jungels, who had been isolated, left without much team support, took it on himself to respond. And then Diego Ulissi, who won stage four, seized the moment and he got across the gap. And those three stayed away to the finish. They got up through the small, pretty town of Castelcucco and held on to the finish line, where Ulissi easily won his second stage of the Giro. Jungels and Amador, who were first and second overall, gained 11 seconds on the rest. The big losers of the day, Jakob Fuglsang, who was 8th this morning, and Domenico Pozzovivo, who was 11th, slipped a handful of places overall. The other big news from here is that Tom Dumoulin of Giant Alpecin, who won the opening time trial and held the pink jersey for 6 days, pulled out of the race midway. We'll hear from him a little bit later on. The jerseys then stay on all the same shoulders. Bob Jungels is in pink and white. Andre Greipel still has the red jersey, and Damiano Cunego has a healthy lead in the blue King of the Mountains. Meanwhile, on the other side of the pond, our contributor Kaylee Fritz is now at the Tour of California, where Tinkoff's Peter Sagan and Etix's Quick Steps Julian Alaphilippe have won the opening two stages. We might hear from Kaylee next week, I think.
We might, and it was breathless stuff today, wasn't it? We thought we were pretty sure that it was going to be a routine transitional stage, but does such a thing exist at the Giro? You know, we did see on the profile that climb, the Forcella Mostacin, I think it's called, the penultimate climb on today's stage, and we thought there was a small possibility that something might happen there. The general classification riders might be coaxed into action, and sure enough, that's what happened. And Bob Jungels, it's always great to see the leader in a stage race, the pink jersey, attacking. And I think, you know, you spoke to Etix Quick-Step director sportif Davide Bramati at the finish, and he suggested it was more for practical reasons, really. There'd been a bit of kerfuffle, a bit of a crash earlier on in the stage, which we'll talk about later in the episode. But really, it made sense for Jungels to attack on two levels. One, to gain time, and also because he was pretty isolated at that point, and it was probably the safest place to be at the front of the race.
Well, that was exactly it. That's what Bramati said. Etix lost, I think, four or five riders in a crash that came around 40 kilometres from the finish when the bunch split. That left Jungels pretty much on his own. I think he had Matteo Trentin with him, but that was it. And so when it all kicked off on the climb, the safest place to be was to be at the front, alert and reacting, rather than playing catch up behind, and it worked out well for him. And you know, he perhaps could have won that stage if he hadn't done so much pulling on the front on the run in into the town here.
He could have won that stage, certainly, and it really set things up though unfortunately, or fortunately for Diego Lucy, because he was really in a perfect position with Jungels and Amador both having a lot to gain from being in that move, both gaining time on general classification. They were both quite happy to do some work. I mean, certainly Jungels did a lot more work than Amador, but they were both content to go to the finish, gain that little bit of time, not so bothered about the stage victory, although Amador did contest the sprint. But Ulisi was really in the perfect sandwich there, wasn't he? Because he was the fastest guy in that group, and you know, he came into this Giro, I know he came in great form, he was very, very light. You could see straight away, as soon as you looked at the profiles of this Giro d'Italia, that there were a couple of stages, two or three stages, that suited him perfectly. And the way things have panned out have been exactly as he would have imagined in his wildest dreams at Praia Mare and then here in Asolo. And again, he showed his class, really. And Paolo Bettini, who is a rider he's been compared to in the past, after the stage winning Praia Mare, said that this was a real breakthrough for Ulisi, because he's a very, very talented rider, but he's lacked confidence, he's lacked a bit of some daring do in the past, and that could have been the real turning point, the real sort of game changer in terms of his confidence, and that now he would really seize the nettle,
grasp the nettle.
I'm trying to think in different languages. Grasp the nettle, and
rather than just getting it wrong,
and that's exactly what he did today, wasn't he? He chose his moment perfectly at the bottom of the final climb into Asolo. He latched on to Amador and Jungels, and he just really sat on the wheels and cruised in, and was always going to be the fastest guy in the finishing straight.
Yeah, he was, and it's remarkable, isn't it? We're, 11 stages in, and the spoils have been shared around really a very small number of teams, certainly in terms of the stage winners. What have we got? Giant Alpecin, Etics Quickstep have won 3, Lotto Soudal have won 3, Lotto NL Jumbo have won 1, and Lampre Merida have won 2. There's a lot of teams that really haven't made a great deal of impact in this race, and that might well be because if you look at the likes of Tinkoff and Movistar, Astana, even Cannondale, you know, they're keeping everything dry for the GC battle next week, which we should turn our minds to now, really, because the GC riders did show themselves a little bit. There was that move on the descent when Vincenzo Nibali, Alejandro Valverde and Esteban Chavez, who's looking pretty perky, got away. Again, wasn't perhaps the most obvious place to make a move until you realise that you're talking about Nibali and Valverde, who are two of the best descenders in the race.
An odd move, I thought, from Nibali, when you consider the stages to come and you consider the fact that he came into this Giro in subpar form, I would say. You know, Giro del Trentino, he really struggled. Didn't look particularly good at Roccarazzo, the first mountaintop finish. And you consider the stages to come, you consider this weekend in particular, the Cividale del Friuli, which I think is the perfect stage to him, with the hardest descent, the most dangerous descent of the Giro. Then you've got the mountain time trial to Alpe di Siusi, then you've got the Dolomite blockbuster to Corvara, and really it's a question now of saving as much energy and being as economical as possible, or so you would think. You would think that Nibali would just be economizing now with those stages in mind and with the final week in mind, but he said at the finish that he believes that he has to seize every opportunity, not grasp, Lionel, seize, it's the right verb this time, seize every opportunity just to gain 20, 30, 40 seconds. And before we hear from Nibali, because I did go to the Astana bus and see what he had to say at the finish, we have the man who knows more about Vincenzo Nibali than Nibali himself, and probably knows more about Nibali's tactics today than Nibali himself. Ciro Scogna Emilio, it's been a few days, but you're back finally, mercifully.
Finally, hopefully, dear listeners, I would like to stay here every day and also every night, because in my opinion, next step, we could organize a podcast in the night. Why not? Instead of sleeping during the podcast. Why not? Lionel, Daniel, we are all together. So why we could think about a podcast by night? Why not?
But well, was Vincenzo Nibali hallucinating when he thought it was a good idea to go on the attack on the Forcella Mostacin today?
Well, I think that the Asana tactics change a little bit before the crash, because more or less almost all the team was involved in a crash before, and so the tactic was not the tactic that we have planned. In a certain way, I had an impression in the finish line, I had an impression that Nibali was a little bit upset with Valverde, because Valverde didn't give him an help in the action, but as a matter of fact, Nibali said now, we had the possibility to speak to him just a few minutes ago, he explained that he was not angry with Valverde.
Well, so there you go, Ciro, you've said that his opinion seems to have changed in the last hour, when he's maybe thought a little bit more coldly, a little bit more coolly about Valverde's tactics. But let's just hear from him now. Straight after the finish line, on the Astana bus, I was there, and this is what Vincenzo Nibali had to say about Valverde's tactics and his own tactics.
Mi sono mosso, c'è stata quell'accelerazione in salita da parte di Kruijswijk.
There was an attack on the climb by Kruijswijk. Then I knew the descent was so hard, so I tried to go away. There were three of us, but Valverde wasn't very committed, and there was no harmony in the group. I set up, then another race started. Prior to that, there had been a big crash, and all of our riders had gone down, except Malacane and Kotsateyev. So I had to be careful. I told Valverde to pull, and he said he wouldn't, because he had Amador in the group behind. We sat up, got caught, then Amador attacked immediately. I think they want to go for GC with Valverde and Amador. If Valverde had really wanted to gain time on some of the other rivals today, he would have worked with me. He didn't. So it looks as though they're keeping their options open. We had to jump on any opportunity that presented itself. We're here to race, not to go for a leisure ride. When we see a chance, we have to take our opponents by surprise. Counterattack. Getting it right isn't always easy. Before we go to the finish today, there were riders all over the road. We set up because Valverde wouldn't collaborate. But if he had, we might have gained 30, 40 seconds, which could have been very valuable.
Ciro, he seems to have calmed down a bit after the finish. He seems to have a new perspective on events today in this stage that's finished at Asolo.
You mean the shark?
Yeah, the shark.
Yeah, the shark. I mean, for the shark, these stages are not really the most important stages of this Giro. He always tries something because his way of doing the bicycle racer, yes. But and we have to remember also that six years ago, he won his first stage in his career in the Giro d'Italia in Asolo. Maybe he was a little bit inspired by this, maybe not. But I think that this weekend will be crucial for him more than these stages, yes.
What's that noise, Daniel? What's that noise?
I think the shark's tail's coming.
Pensare troppo fa male a un corridore che punta tutto sugli attacchi repentini e non è abituato a fare calcoli. Thinking too much hurts a rider who wants to attack repeatedly and race instinctively.
So there, Lionel, that was Vincenzo Nibali not talking about today's stage, not talking about cycling. Ciro will approve because you don't particularly enjoy talking about cycling. He was talking about breaking up from his first girlfriend, Elena, and how it was very difficult to think, very difficult to have clear thoughts in that period, very difficult to concentrate on bike racing. And, you know, are his thoughts, have his tactics so far in this Giro d'Italia suggested that his mind is confused and addled in a similar way, Ciro?
I don't think so. In this case, I must confess that he seems to be very concentrated, very on the paper of this race. I mean, also, you remember the polemic against the car after the stage of Roccarasso. He gives me the impression that he's really motivated in order to try to win the pink jersey in this Giro. But I think that he's also, I mean, he's also sure that it won't be easy because there are a lot of main contenders, some of them expected, as Valverde, for example, but also other ones, as for example Amador or Jungels, why not?
But Ciro, there is a school of thought that, you know, we've got the Agnello, the Colle dell'Agnello, we've got the Bonnet, we've got five passes in the Dolomites. Why attack? Why try to gain 20, 30, 40 seconds on a day like this? He said in the interview there that every opportunity is an opportunity to gain time and that he should jump on any opportunity. But it does seem slightly strange. And there is a school of thought that Nibali attacked today because he's not going very well and he needs to be opportunistic. He needs to look for any opportunity to get rid of people like Chavez, Micah, Zakarin, who he's worried about.
Well, the real answer to this question will certainly arrive, will start to arrive in the weekend. But this school of thinking is not bad. Could be true. Yes, listeners, I have not the answer. Yes, I must confess, because I'm not God. It seems sometimes for my listeners, for our listeners, but could be a good idea. And moreover, I see that, for example, the Movistar guys as Valverde and Rodolfo Amador, they look very strong, so they can be a really danger for the Shark.
Very interesting piece in your newspaper yesterday, I think, Ciro, about Nibali's preparation for this Giro. How many kilometres he'd done this year? Something like 13,887. It was very precise. Also, details about his equipment at this Giro d'Italia. He switched this year from 172.5 centimeter pedal cranks to 175 centimeter or millimeter, sorry, pedal cranks. That's quite a bit. That could be quite a big difference.
He's not Crazy Legs Crane, is he? I mean,
well, I have to say that Daniel reads Gazzetta with more attention than me, because you know that. Okay, I write about numbers, about tactic, about strategy, but you know, dear listeners, I'm not really concentrated on what I'm doing here. So, I mean, I write with a kind of inspiration, but you don't have to take all the things that I write 100% sure, Leo.
Or even seriously.
Even seriously. No, not at all. Not at all. And unfortunately, now I have to go, but we don't talk for anything about Filippo Pozzato.
I was about to say, Ciro, this was Pozzato Day. Lyle and I drove past his hometown, San Rigo, on the way to the finish today. He was in the break. He told us earlier this week that this was the day when the magic was going to happen. Alas, his former team, Lampre, chased him down.
Well, but San Rigo, well, we have to be careful with words, but San Rigo could be a kind of House of Vatican of cycling for us, because it's really, really important, the hometown of Filippo Pozzato. But as a matter of fact, I have the impression that today he has spent more time at TV in the transmission of Rai after the stage than in the stage. So, Filippo, what are you doing? But I don't know, but my dream to become his manager for his post-career about cycling, I have still this dream.
Wow, well, we'll look out for that. But Ciro is, and with that, he's off, running. Straight to the buffet.
Eurosport, the home of cycling.
Thank you to Eurosport for sponsoring us here at the Giro d'Italia, and all season, in fact. And now it's time for Richard Moore's nomination for the Pedaleur de Charme. He's been monitoring social media and using his own eyes to come up with a shortlist of one and award the prize. We'll have to go and find the winner and present him with a Pedaleur de Charme t-shirt. So who is it today?
Oh, it's three in the airport. We can see the rider there. He's looking for his glasses, actually, in the water.
Well, it's been a busy day on the Pedaleur de Charme beat here in South London. You heard a bit snippet there of the Eurosport commentary. Eurosport, of course, sponsor this segment of the podcast, the Daily Pedaleur de Charme Award. And it was Sean Kelly spotting Lee Howard fishing around in a bit of water for his sunglasses. And there were a few of you nominated him for today's Pedaleur de Charme. I'm also sort of bowing to Daniel Freeb's request. He's very fussy, Daniel, and he requested a more left field, more quirky pick. Eurosport also, our sponsors, also nominated Lee Howard, but, you know, that's not swayed me at all. There were a few of you nominated Lee Howard. I think that having been involved in a crash and looking for your sunglasses, that is the very essence of Pedaleur de Charme. It reminds me of the 1985 Tour de France, where Bernardino crashed on the finish into Saint Etienne and, you know, bashed himself up badly, broke his nose, two black eyes, but was more concerned by the fact that his Ray-Bans were smashed in the crash. That is Pedaleur de Charme in a nutshell. So Lee Howard, I Am Cycling, today's Pedlar de Charme, Daniel Lionel, it's your job tomorrow to make sure he gets a t-shirt. Over to you.
Well, an unusual winner there, Daniel. I've not heard of a rider falling into water in a crash before. You spoke to Lee Howard after the stage. What actually happened?
Well, Lee Howard unfortunately got wet, didn't he, out on the road to Aslo. It didn't rain today. There were some pretty angry-looking clouds at one point gathering over the, not quite the Dolomites, Lionel, but Monte Grappa, which overlooks Asolo. But that wasn't the reason why Lee Howard came into the finish dripping wet. He'd actually taken a bit of a dip, unfortunately, in a ditch, in a very full ditch, in a very wet ditch, beside the road at a very crucial point of the race. So there were various general classification riders that got blocked behind that crash and got held up. Domenico Pozzovivo lost time. He lost about a minute 30, and he slipped further back in general classification. But Lee Howard, as you said, I spoke to him at the finish by the EM Cycling team bus, by which time he had dried out slightly, but he wasn't too pleased with how the day had gone. Pretty unconventional crash, and I imagine pretty uncomfortable for you. You ended up in a ditch, is that right?
Yeah, I ended up in the little river chasing my sunglasses as they floated away, but no, I'm okay. It was a big stack. Hopefully no one's too injured.
Any ideas what caused it?
Honestly, I'm not sure. I'd like to see who caused it, or if it was any one person, but I mean, I can't complain too much. Like I said, I'm not hurt or not injured too badly. It's just one of those things, especially on a road like that. When you have a crash, everyone behind has nowhere to go except over the top, and yeah.
And you find yourself floundering around in water, you know, up to your neck in water, sort of 25k from the end of a Giro d'Italia stage. What do you think?
My new shoes are very wet. I mean, honestly, it's better than rolling around on the pavement. So, like I said, I can't complain too much. I was in the grass and the water, so I'm quite lucky.
And most Aussies are good swimmers anyway, of course.
Yeah, I haven't been swimming lately. I'm still coming out of winter, but yeah, no, I was like I said, I'm lucky. I ended up in the water, but all's well that ends well.
Well, you'll be in all the highlights reels from now on from this Giro, but how's the Giro going generally for the team, Lee?
So. I mean, we had a good result in the time trial. I actually didn't find out the finish today, but I was in that initial breakaway, which was a good breakaway. We had two of us in there, and for some reason that came back. But and then we really focused on being in the breakaway today, and we done that because we thought there was a good chance of it going to the line. But overall, I mean, we definitely would have liked to have won a stage, especially in those first sprint stages with our head sprinter, Matteo. But unfortunately, for whatever reason, we just couldn't get it together as well as we should have. So now we're just taking it day by day. Tomorrow's another chance for me in the sprints, and we'll see how we go.
Okay, well, a few more opportunities between now and Turin. Don't forget your rubber ring and your armbands tomorrow.
You are listening to the Cycling Podcast at the Giro d'Italia, supported by Science in Sport. Science in Sport, fueled by science.
Thank you very much to Science in Sport for sponsoring us here at the Giro d'Italia. As a result of that, they are offering our listeners a 20% discount on their products. So if you fancy getting your hands on some Science in Sport products at a discounted price, visit www.scienceinsport.com and type in the code SIS20, that's SIS20, when you check out. Now, Daniel, interesting, just before we heard the Science in Sport jingle there, that you were mentioning the quality of the roads here in Italy. It's something I certainly noticed in the south of Italy. As we've got a little bit further north, the road quality has improved a little bit, but nowhere near as smooth as the roads in the town of Maranello, where we stayed last night, which is of course the home of Ferrari. We headed from there this morning to the Maserati factory, didn't we? We had a little guided tour.
Well, we are trying to take in a bit of local colour, and in that area of Italy, so the centre north of Italy is on the line of where the Apennines head south. There are a number of towns there that have made their name and become very famous because of the sports car companies that are based there. Ferrari are based in Maranello, Lamborghini are also in the region, and of course Maserati, who are very kindly lent us a car for the Giro d'Italia, and they're based in Modena, where the stage started today, and also home of Balsamic Vinegar, Lionel. You were very excited to, well, at the prospect of perhaps going to somewhere where we might get some good local vinegar.
But it's a lovely drink.
It's a lovely drink. Parmigiano Reggiano, Parmesan cheese, who, of course, we should mention are sponsors or partners of Bardiani CSF, stage winners yesterday. However, as we were saying, we dropped in on Maserati this morning in Modena. We went to the main plant, the headquarters of Maserati. We were very privileged to have the company and have the wisdom of Giorgio Manicardi, who is a bit of an institution, we were told, at Maserati. He's been there for many decades, and he gave us a guided tour of the factory. And even if you're not interested in sports cars, which we were not particularly before this Giro d'Italia, Giorgio is a fascinating man, fascinating ambassador.
Well, he's a passionate speaker, isn't he? Anyone who talks with such passion about the thing that they're knowledgeable about, I think is always a compelling listen. I found the factory tour fascinating, the way the cars are all put together pretty much by hand and on the clock, aren't they? The cars move around the production line. They move from one point to the next point to the next point, and they finish 10 cars a day.
And here he is, Giorgio Manicardi, explaining a little bit about why the centre of Italy has become such a mecca for sports car enthusiasts and sports car manufacturers, and also where the very famous Maserati logo, the Neptune's Trident, comes from.
This is the Motor Valley, you know. Okay. Because first of all, Maserati was born. Maserati really was born in Bologna, but it is the first car company sitting in Modena. In 1939, the company moved from Bologna to Modena, and around Maserati were born suppliers, because we know that in the past most of the car company were producing small numbers. Maserati was a company producing 300-400 cars a year. Ferrari 200-250, Lamborghini 70, De Tomaso 50. Maserati was founded by Maserati brothers. There were seven Maserati brothers. One died very young, six Maserati brothers. One of them was not involved in cars, but he was an artist. Mario Maserati was the man designing the Trident. Maserati was born in Bologna. Maserati brothers charged Mario, who was an artist, a painter, to find the logo. And working in Bologna, he has reached the main square, Piazza Maggiore, where there is a fountain. At the center, there is the statue of Neptune with the Trident. And that became the logo. And we have the original design made by Mario Maserati. And there is a link between cars and Trident, because the legend tells that Neptune, throwing the Trident into the sea, had horses born, and a lot of horses under the hood.
Thank you very much to Maserati UK for sorting us out. Obviously, every Grand Tour involves an awful lot of driving, not just the distance from the start of the stage to the finish, but off to our hotels each night. We probably clock up, 4,000 kilometres? Must be more. We'll have a count, but we haven't done the Netherlands in the Maserati, only the Italian legs, but it's still clocking up quite a few kilometres on the dashboard, isn't it?
It is, Lionel. It's just a very interesting journey independently of the bike race. You know, you do the Giro d'Italia year after year, and you kind of notice, as the great, far more distinguished journalists than us used to notice in days gone by, you know, there were some very decorated and celebrated writers that used to cover the Giro d'Italia for papers like La Repubblica, Corriere della Sera, guys who have also written very, very famous books, novelists, and they would talk about the Italy that they saw in front of their eyes, as well as the bike race and how Italy was evolving, etc. And it's just been very interesting over the last couple of weeks to, you know, take a bit of a snapshot of Italy and how it's recovering from the economic crisis that we mentioned, and also, you know, things like the ethnic diversity, which is certainly much greater than it was 10 years ago, 15 years ago when I started covering the Giro d'Italia. And yet we still see some of the hallmarks and the trademarks of Italy that we saw back then. You know, the passion for the bike race, the passion for the Giro is one of them. And, you know, there have been good crowds here in Asolo. We're in a real hotbed of cycling here. This really is the equivalent in the cycling industry of what the Maranello area is for the car industry, because we're just down the road, or we're just a few hundred metres away here from the Selle Italia and the Selle Royale headquarters.
Well, one man who's not going to be seeing any more Italy as the Giro d'Italia goes on is Tom Dumoulin, who had 6 days in a pink jersey in the first week. He pulled out today at around about the halfway mark, and he had a little gathering at his bus while the stage was still going on and explained exactly why it is that he is out of the race.
Of course, as a cyclist, you want to finish a Grand Tour. That's almost goal number one for every cyclist who starts a Grand Tour. Yeah, well, it's not possible. I tried it yesterday. I had already problems before the rest day. I hoped to recover. Didn't work. I tried to fight on yesterday, and today, before the start, I knew it was going to be very difficult, but I still wanted to try. I thought maybe two flat days will make it a little bit better, and but yeah, it didn't make sense anymore to continue. I would not have a chance now to recover from the, and I would only make it worse probably to continue. Right now I'm just disappointed. I think in a few days I can look back on this Giro as being very successful, and but now it's a bit difficult.
When did you first start to feel the discomfort in your saddle area? Which stage was it?
The day after stage six, so stage seven, I had some problems, and then it worsened actually every day.
It's a problem that isn't going to get any easier as the race goes on, isn't it?
Apparently not. No, I hoped to recover a bit during the rest day, but it didn't really, and maybe a little bit, but then yesterday's 220k really hard stage really didn't make it better, so yeah.
Was it sounds a daft question, but was it a really uncomfortable day in the saddle yesterday?
It was, yeah. Mm-hmm.
You didn't have any thoughts of not getting to the finish?
I thought, okay, now I started, and I went on and on and on, and then I was quite close to the finish, so I thought, okay, I just finished today, and then we'll take conclusions afterwards. Yeah, actually this morning I also again tried it, but it was enough now.
So Tom Dumoulin there, suffering with really the injury that cyclists can't brush off, the saddle sore. That's one that's not going to get better. You spend 4 hours, 5 hours a day in the saddle. There's no time for it to recover. Very little that can be done really to treat it while the race is going on. He'd had hoped that the rest day would give him a little bit of respite, but no luck for Tom Dumoulin. So we'll see how the rest of his season pans out. And that leaves Steven Kruiswijk, the Lotto NL Jumbo climber, as the Dutch hope for this Giro d'Italia, lying fourth overall. And I caught up with him at the finish. A day like today, as a GC contender, is it one that you're just glad to tick off because it's flat for so long and then really punchy at the end and a lot of aggression?
Yeah, it's a hard day, and especially the final, you have to be concentrated and fight for your position because that's the most important of the day. Okay, the final was pretty tough, but I felt good, so for me it was nice to test myself a little bit and to see what the other guys would do. It's a day you have to survive.
And looking ahead to Saturday in particular, the leading group of contenders is going to slim down quite considerably on Saturday, we would expect. What's your strategy going to be going into that?
I don't know yet. I have to see. First Friday we have a hard race, and yeah, we have to see what that's going to bring, and tomorrow as well, and we'll make a plan for it.
Okay, very lastly, Tom Dumoulin has gone home today, and that makes you the weight of Dutch hope is on your shoulders.
Yeah, that's okay. Tom did it perfectly the first 10 days, and I hope I can take his place over.
So we'll see what Steven Kruiswijk is made of when the big mountains come. He's been riding a fairly conservative race, although he did show himself a little bit by trying to chase down the moves that were going on. Well, both the climbs, really. He was quite prominent at the front, but the big mountains are where he will hope to make gains, very handily placed.
He is, and it will be very interesting to see how he approaches the big mountains, because last year he lost an awful lot of time in the first week. He lost about 11 minutes, I think, in the first week, and just really moved through the gears as the race went on, and benefited really from the freedom that he had by virtue of being so far down on general classification. He's riding a completely different race this time. He's really trying to follow the best riders, and some guys can adapt to that and some guys can really step up and some can't. Kruijswijk has been very discreet so far. He's not really done an awful lot. His team haven't had to work at all, and he looks to have ridden very economically, but you know, the proof of the pudding will be in the eating in the last week.
Well, speaking of eating, they've packed up the buffet here, so my thoughts are now turning to dinner and our hotel. So we should probably wrap it up there. Daniel, tomorrow, a very flat stage. We've got to go to a computer shop because I've had what's called a casino today. Is that right? I've left my laptop charger in the hotel.
Or a
morning.
Lionel Blair.
I've had a Lionel
Blair.
Not a
Lionel Bernie, but a Lionel Blair.
Yeah, morale really has dipped this afternoon because I'm on about 40% battery on my laptop. A journalist without a laptop's really, I mean, it's like a professional cyclist without a bicycle.
What food stuff could take you back up to 100%? Could take you up... back up to Giro d'Italia form, Lionel?
Well, I think a combination of the antipasti, prima piatti, seconda piatti, and bring it on.
I will make it my business to make all of that happen for you this evening.
Thank you very much. Well, thanks for listening. We'll be back again tomorrow. In the meantime, Daniel, thank you.
Thank you, Lionel.